Hi, this is Mandy Griffin.
And I'm Katie Swalwell.
And welcome to Our Dirty Laundry.
Stories of white ladies making a mess of things.
And how we need to clean up our act. Okay. I'm so excited.
We were just talking because we haven't seen each other in a while. Do you think people thought we died?
I know, maybe. I have gotten like some messages.
We aren't friends anymore. Like that something happened between us.
That could be.
I love you more today than yesterday. Nothing has happened. We're both in totally decent health. This is just life. Like having little kids and full-time jobs and trying to keep up with everything is just really hard. That said, I've been looking forward to this ever since we scheduled it. And I've been looking forward to this series that we want to do, this season's topic so much. And I think it just continues to get more and more relevant. So I'm really happy about it. But it's like, I don't even remember how to do this. Like, I need to listen to our theme song again.
I know you were saying like you couldn't find your headphones. I got a new laptop. And so when I went to like plug my external microphone in, I was like, oh, I can't use that with this new computer because it just has a USB plug-in. And the new computer just has lightning connections. So I'm like, oh, now I've got to get some connector that converts the USB into a lightning.
That's why I'm wearing my preschool headphones right now. His like little tiny ones. They actually have a USB clicker that pops into that little hole. What we were talking about, just to catch up a little bit before we dive into our topic for today, which I'm so excited about and is long overdue. And I think at the end of the day is really ultimately why we started this in the first place. If I go back to like our initial age, we were mad at white moms, honestly. So we're just, this is going to be the topic of our next season is white moms and how they
basically like weaponized mother.
Yes.
Ooh. Is what it is.
Have you been thinking about that, or did that just come up off the top of your head?
No, I definitely have been. Yeah. I mean, no, so I mean, good. We can talk about, we'll get into why it is like an actually great term to describe what these women are doing, because it's very intentional, I think. And then like, we're going to start more contemporarily because we like to start where we're currently angry at. But as we found out in all of our previous seasons, all of this stuff has roots that go back to like the beginning of time. So we're going to like lure everybody in with talking about this like contemporaneous stuff and why we're all pissed off right now. And then we'll get deeper into all of the history behind it because there's so much. It's terrifying.
I'm picturing just like the world's biggest scraggly carrot underneath this like scraggly leafy green. You're going to show us the leafy green right now, and then we're just going to like keep moving dirt, and this fucking tuber is just going to get bigger and bigger and weirder and gnarlier, and it just goes, it's going to be really hard to pull out of the ground. But that, I think this is, for me, at least, like everything else we've learned so far has been so helpful and important and interesting and real, like all of it. But I think because my identity as a parent is such a salient part of who I am, and I'm so in the weeds with kids that are young, like 3 and 6, that this idea of weaponized motherhood, white women using their role as a mother as cover for the shittiest stuff you can imagine is it's me at like my absolute core as a wife mom myself. So I am so excited. That being said, we both are catching up before the call. We're both like sad. We come to you today I was going to tell you that I'm in like a very contemplative mood for lots of reasons, and I think you were sad for lots of, like, there's just so much heaviness and sadness in the world right now as we write this, as we talk to each other. There's just so many horrible things happening. And I was laughing because the last text I sent you, I don't know if you watched that video that I sent you, but it
is Yes. The beige.
Sad beige moms. And it's a good maybe segue connecting our sadness to weaponized mothers, because maybe we need to do a mini-sode about sad beige moms. Did you know that was a thing? like a turtle?
No, I'd never seen any of that. And it's horrifying, but not surprising.
I would not stop laughing at this TikTok video. We will post it. That was so great at just kind of ripping apart this trend. And I think anytime someone like embraces an insult, I don't know how to feel about that. Like when, but the sad beige moms are like very proud to be sad beige moms. And they're like painting their kids' primary color toys in various shades of taupe and gray. And then, of course, these are like things their kids are putting in their mouths. So on just like a basic health and hygiene level, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And then it's just this aesthetic where everything is monochromatic taupe. It honestly, I was like, wow, you are teeing yourselves up for just like, could you lean more into your whiteness by being sad beige moms? No, you could not. Yeah. Maybe there are some moms who are not white who really love that aesthetic. Actually, I can think of one, but of course we know you can buy into whiteness without being white. That I've been so annoyed. I know I'm primed to be annoyed for lots of other things happening in the world right now. One other thing I want to talk about before we get into our topic today. But I've been going into Target and the aisle for, you know, now I can't think of the name. It's this couple. They have like
the Magnolia people.
Thank you. What are the names? Uh-huh. Chip and Joanna Gaines.
Gaines,
we could talk about them a lot another day and their love. But I have been actively pissed going to Target and I have to walk past the aisle of all their home goods that are aggressively passive.
Taupe.
Like it is, it makes me so angry. Yes. And it is sad beige mom. That's what I realized. I was like, limp, sad, washed out, bland, boring as fuck home goods. Why are these the featured products? And what does that say about the world we live in today that these are like the frontline items to buy? Maybe people
this is the aesthetic.
Are listening and they're like, oh, but I love my tea towels I just bought. I don't. I will go on record. I hate that aisle. I hate that product line. It is sad beige mom and I cannot even. So that is what's on my mind right now. So that's
bad. Well, and we were just talking, like you said, we were talking before this and we're like in this state. And I was just saying, I know we've talked about before on the podcast that like anger is my default emotion, my go-to. But I've done like listening to podcasts and like various other experiences and stuff. First of all, the recognition that anger is a secondary emotion, not a primary emotion, and it comes rooted from various other things. And that my realization has been that I think that my anger is just rooted in sadness about like how just awful so many things are. And I think also in the feeling of hopelessness that there's nothing we can ultimately do to change a lot of it. Which I know people will fight back against. I try to fight back against myself all the time in that. Yeah. And try to tell myself like there are things you can do. That's why we wanted to do this, just kind of talk through things and like educate ourselves and maybe help other people to see things in a different way. Right. And these are the ways that we do have power, but in so many other ways, it just it seems so powerless when we look at all of these horrific things. And that is just sad. And I don't know like what to do with it in a lot of
I know what you shouldn't do. Surround yourself with goddamn beige. There's a step in the right direction.
It's not gonna help. It's not gonna help.
No. And you know what? I have zero data about this, but I feel like the sad beige aesthetic is like the Venn diagram of people who are into that and who want all of this horrible stuff to happen has to be like almost a circle. So to me, like one way to fight back is to fucking bring color into our world. Literally, figuratively, like reject beige. Reject cleanliness. Like, I don't mean cleanliness like, you know, in a sanitary level.
Hygiene,
like,
well, honestly, not hygiene.
Though, I have that shower in like approximately 6 days. So I have work to do there, but it is the idea that, you know, we have to have everything be so picture perfect, neat and tidy. Like, God damn it. No. Yeah. And these are all like super problems anyway for people. Like we own a house. We're lucky to own a house. And like, that's part of all these systems anyway, whatever. It's just, it makes me mad. So at the very least, like I'm going to reject beige and that's going to be one way to push back. And
Yeah.
Is, I know that it is easy to despair, but I, for me, sadness and despair are different because sadness can still have some room for hope. Like to me, despair is when you have no hope left. And I really feel like I have come close to that, but it's what I will say. I was just talking to a friend earlier today that one of the reasons I am so sad is that it takes so much less work to destroy than it does to protect and create and build. So like a lot of the things that are happening out there, like it does not take much energy or effort to ruin things that have taken generations to build or to bomb a place or to kill a person. Like that can all happen very quickly. And it takes years and years and generations to heal and rebuild. So I think there's just like ultimately the balance of energy is so wildly off for that, that I have a sadness about that and just like a pre-exhaustion about that. But I'm not hopeless or else, right, why would we even bother doing this podcast? Yeah. Okay, that said, I am feeling, this is a good, I think, segue to what you're going to talk about. But one thing I want to put on people's radar is this time of year in many places is when the legislatures are in session and there are bills being proposed and they're going through subcommittee and the funnel, whatever that's called, where, you know, it makes its way through the committees and then it comes up on the floor and then it gets voted on and et cetera, et cetera. So I live in Iowa for those who listen and know. And if you're watching, we are absolutely at the cutting edge of the very worst stuff. And we have had multiple bills that are so awful that too long to list here, including people who are trans having to have special identification that marks them. I don't know. Like it's just it's heinous. The anti-immigration laws, rolling back child labor laws. Like there's so many things that are awful. Proposals to arm teachers, et cetera, et cetera. But the bill that, because my expertise, my background is in social studies education, this bill is House File 2330. And people should look it up just to read it because I have no doubt that it's copycat legislation that's going to
show. Yeah, it's happening in other places.
And it is, in a nutshell, it's very long, but it's focused on history and civics education, K-12. And it says that the social studies education in public schools, K-12, should be dedicated to teaching the value and praiseworthy qualities of Western civilization, period. And Western civilization is defined as ancient Israel, Roman Greece, France, and England. And that's pretty much it. And it lists over and over again. It even lists some real specific people. And I know you can imagine in a list of, you know, 15 specific individuals. Can you take a wild guess how it breaks down demographically? Take a wild guess.
A lot of white.
Yeah, because 1932 called and wants its social studies curriculum back. So it is repulsive. And the part of it that is so disturbing is, as it's laying out this, it uses words like devotion, praiseworthy, like that's how we should teach about Western civilization, and figures like Andrew Jackson, who is a heinous scumbag, right? Like who committed horrible atrocities. Not to say that every figure isn't complex. Like I'm not interested in only saying like what a dickbag, but I am interested in like acknowledging the fact that he participated in and advocated for genocide. Like that seems like useful information for people to have, right? But it just keeps over and over and over again saying Western civilization, and then it says this shall be taught as fact, not as constructed. So it is even legislating how you broach these topics, and it's trying to cut people off at the pass to say, don't even think about saying that this is like a narrative or like one way to talk about it, which of course it is, like that is what it is. But to say, nope, the fact that Black civilization is the font of everything great, like that is what you will do. It is repulsive. Yeah. It is so harmful. It is the worst. So please contact your legislators if you live in Iowa. Please, if you don't live in Iowa, read it, look at what's happening in your own state, wherever you're living, if you're in the United States. If you're not in the United States, good for you. tell us where you live and if we can come visit and stay for a while. But, you know, it is really frustrating. And I know at the sub-hearing committee, there were white moms there who were expressing gratitude and excitement about this curriculum, that this is so great. They want their kids to learn the truth. And it will be wonderful for their children to learn in schools. And this is the kind of curriculum. And because schooling and education has so long been seen as like the purview of women and of mothers in particular, this is a place where we often use our political voice. And to hear white women coming out in favor of this like absolute hot, stinking pile of garbage legislation, that's not only just like flagrantly inaccurate, but so disrespectful. It Black History Month especially. It's like, what is wrong with you? I had a real moment where I'm like, I'm not going to cry today. I'm going to hold it together for this podcast, but just put that on everybody's radars to check out. So
yeah. Well, and as you said, that transitions perfectly because it's like these white women that are trying to influence our school's curriculums and what our kids are taught is the topic of today, Moms for Liberty.
Can you say that without tasting vomit in your mouth?
Oh, no. And especially not after like looking into it, because, of course, I'd heard of them and I knew generally like what their thing was about. I try to like not give much attention to these people for the most part. But I think, you know, in order to effectively organize against these kinds of efforts, we have to know what they're going after and what their arguing points are so that you can counter them effectively. And so it has been helpful to dig into this just a little bit. So Moms for Liberty, I don't know if you know like when they started or why.
Can
like,
I take a guess?
Yeah, sure.
Florida? Does it have something to do with Florida?
Florida! Oh my gosh, it has everything.
I say that only like it could just as easily be Iowa, but I feel like, oh no, it probably started in Florida.
It's Florida. It's Florida for sure. And it was founded in January of 2021.
God, it's not that old. I thought it was around longer. You know, slow clap for their success in such a short time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So founded in 2021, and the reason that they were founded was basically to be against the COVID-19 mandates in schools. So that's why all these moms first got together to fight against masking mandates and vaccine mandates.
Is there reasoning about that because vaccines are bad? Like, why were they so vehemently anti-masking and anti-vaccine, I guess? Like, why?
Their whole argument is it takes away parental rights, that parents should have the ultimate control over if their kids receive any sort of medical treatment, which is hysterical because we'll get into their like hypocrisy in the trans and LGBTQ community with that.
But I'm guessing like Lindsay Sullivan or whatever her name is that like started this, I'm sure it's nothing like that. But let's say she is fighting for parental rights, but I'm guessing they're not like, oh, we won, but my parental choice is to mask my kid. Like they weren't just pro-parental rights. Yeah. They did not want to mask their children too, right? Were they, am I wrong at thinking that? Or were they people?
No, like, I mean, I don't know that they were saying like nobody could mask. Like if you want to send your kids to school in a mask, fine. If you want to vaccinate your kids, fine. But you shouldn't be able to exclude kids for not masking.
Because they weren't going to mask.
To me, it's just like, well, you clearly just don't. Yeah. You clearly just don't understand like how germs work. And if you have a communicable disease and not everyone is doing the protective measures, then it's so much less effective. Right. But they don't believe that anyway. They still believe that COVID was like a hoax, basically, and that it wasn't as serious.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's not now, like COVID now, as everyone knows from previous podcast too, if they've listened to them, I work in the emergency room. COVID now is a cold for the vast majority of people. It is at this point much less dangerous than the flu is even. But in 2020, when we knew hardly anything about it, Two, it was much worse. It killed many more people. And now they think that they can just point to it now and be like, see, it's not a big deal. They made it such a big deal. It's a different disease now.
Yes.
It's mutated. It's not the same thing. And we have vaccines. So you can't compare now to back then. It is not the thing. But
I'm sure data really works, though. If you just explain that data to them, then that's really just all we need to do, right?
Okay. Yeah. Unfortunately, the fact that facts don't help people is also something that makes me sad. But yes, so one of the founding people, she actually started this. So the two main co-founders that are still listed on the website were both on school boards to begin with. And one of them started this after she lost her school board seat at the end of 2020. So she was running to be reelected to the school board in the fall of 2020 on the ideals of, you know, parental rights and non-masking and non-vaccine mandate stuff. And she lost to a former school district employee who ran against her opposition to mask mandates and vaccine mandates. So, she was mad because she lost.
Let's keep these people on school boards to keep them busy and not mad so they can't start horrible national organizations that ruin everybody's life. Just like contain them. Keep them busy.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Left them done.
Yeah. So
what are their names, okay, by the way? Because I'm so sure it's not what I'm meant.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was going to say. So no. So the two main founders that are still listed on the website are Tina Deskovich or Deskovich. I'm not sure where the emphasis on what syllable is happens there, but Tina Deskovich and Tiffany Justice.
Okay. Oh, that's ironic.
Are the co-founders listed. Yeah, Tiffany Justice. And then other people might be wondering, because this was in the news more recently, but what about Bridget Ziegler?
No.
Have you heard that name?
The one whose husband was like a big wig party guy, and then they were having like threesomes, and the woman in their couple kind of outed him for being abusive. I know very little, but do you know more about that? Uh-huh. Can we go down that a little bit?
Okay. Yeah. So that's the overview of things. So it's super interesting. So she was the third person that started it with them, but for some reason, like within a few months of it starting, before this whole controversy ever came out, she was then no longer listed as a founder and no longer on their website. So you know there's some story behind that. And I would love to know what it is. And I tried to find out, and it's nowhere on the internet, but you know, some shit happened.
Oh, for sure. Are the three of them like in the same district? Where are they in Florida?
They're all in Florida. I think Deskovich was in Brevard County. She was on the Brevard County School Board. I'm not sure where, because Ziegler is currently on the school board right now. And I might have it later in my notes.
I just wonder how they connected.
School board she's
like
in.
How they knew each other to even start this to begin with.
I mean, so Ziegler, I guess maybe because Ziegler's husband is, I think he's the chair of the Florida Republican Party. So I'm sure they must all know each other somehow, and they're all like buddy buddy with everybody's favorite weirdo DeSantis. And so it's got to be just a connection of like Republican leadership things in Florida. My other thing that I tried to hunt down, and you'll love this, that I think could be another connection, not between all of them, but maybe somehow in there. Is that I went to the Moms for Liberty website. And so I'm initially looking through it, and like the pictures that are up there, you know, the flag and children's running through the fields, carrying the flag behind them, like billowing, blah, blah, blah. And their whole mission statement, their vision, their everything includes liberty, 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 like defense of families, defense of parents' rights. And they have a conference that's coming up this September that's called the Joyful Warriors Conference.
Oh, no, I don't like that.
Which is what I say, like, when we're talking about weaponized motherhood, this is very intentional language that they're using. They're calling themselves warriors. But my initial thing when I first went to the website and said all of that, first thing that went off in my head was, these women have got to be Mormon. at least some of them. At least one.
You need to explain to people why that would occur to you.
And I'll tell you why.
People who don't maybe know your backstory.
Because, oh yeah. So if you haven't listened to the previous episodes, I was raised LDS. I'm no longer practicing. There are like white woman Karenhood is so strong. The tradition of LDS women. There's all sorts of things that we've talked about before that I'm sure we will include in future episodes. But it's because this idea of protecting liberty in particular and the family is a very strong LDS theme. It is like in LDS religious texts, in the Book of Mormon, it's one of the huge themes throughout there. There's actually something called the title of liberty. In the Book of Mormon, that one of the, because I mean, the Book of Mormon is the religious text for LDS people.
Not a Broadway show by
a couple of other things.
That's not what you're referring to.
I mean, it's related. That is actually much more entertaining than the real thing. But like the Bible and the other religious texts, I mean, they're just stories of like basically wars between factions of people. And so a lot of the Book of Mormon is focused on these wars. And one of the religious leaders who's also like a military leader in Mormon text is a guy called Moroni. And when he's leading some people in this battle against, you know, their enemies, part of the scripture is that he like tears a piece of his clothing and makes a flag out of it that is then called the title of liberty. That says, like, in defense of our liberty, our families, our wives, and our children. And that was basically like their battle flag that they like carried to battle with them to remind them of what they were fighting for and the worthiness in their purpose of having these battles and massacring like an entire other, you know, population of people because they're defending their liberty and their family.
Air quotes, which I can and see so, that listeners cannot, but yeah.
Yes, air quotes. Air quotes, liberty and their families. So going to this website and seeing this joyful warriors and liberty and defense of the family and all of that, I'm just like, this is like straight out of LDS scripture, like straight out of it. I'm like, one of these women has to be LDS, like guaranteed. Not hard to Google search that Tina Deskovich is LDS. It's right on her Instagram page that she is wife, mom, LDS, co-founder of Moms for Liberty. Now, I couldn't find anything that lists Tiffany Justice's religious affiliation, and she doesn't say anything on her.
I bet that's
for sure. But yeah, so Tiffany Justice is, and that's not surprising one little
is
bit.
When you said joyful warriors, what I was immediately thinking of is the Quiverful movement, which I think we talked about at one point, and we'll talk about again. But this idea of like, have as many kids as you can to produce warriors for bringing about the second coming of Jesus.
Basically. Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's like, I mean, clearly it's not just an LDS thing, like this entire idea of like having to, I mean, religious fanaticism and wars for Jesus and whatever is like at the root of fucking everything that's happening in the world still, you know, so it's not like Mormons have a stronghold, but I was just a little bit vindicated, I felt, when I saw that pop up. I was like, oh, of course.
What do you call your radar that is like Mormon radar? Or does it make a special sound when it goes off? You know, like what?
Yeah, we could call it like a moment. Definitely. There are some strong signals that are given off.
Is they're already involved in school boards and education world stuff. One, who is it that?
Which we talked about, like, didn't we talk about that being part of Ginny Thomas's entire blueprint that she laid out when we had that episode on her kind of think tanks and conservatism? Part of her plan was women on school boards and like influencing things at that level because she's very aware of the history of women and motherhood.
Well, and the amount of money that's being pumped into school board elections now, especially from far right organizations, is staggering. So yes, there's clearly an acknowledgement that there is power in shaping what the school experience is like for kids, which I would agree. There's a lot of power in that.
Yeah.
Okay. So these three ladies get together somehow and they're put their ring together and they come to, you know, some like underground lair I'm picturing, and then smoke surrounds them and rainbows get out of their rings. Do you remember that old show Captain Planet where they were like, oh, fire, water, and their rings would get together and stopping into Captain Planet, you know? I don't know what exactly they're summoning, that it's definitely not like an eco warrior, but
somehow. So they started somehow from the three of them and have expanded now to their most recent numbers that are listed on their website in July of 2023, that they have 285 chapters in 45 states. And at one point had boosted a membership of more than 115,000 women. They do have a link on their website where you can go and find your local chapter. But here's the fascinating thing. I was like, which five states have resisted this bullfighting from this? And shockingly, Utah is one.
Really? Maybe just because they don't even move them.
I mean, I don't want to give anybody any
idea. No.
Probably because, they don't.
That, maybe that's why. It's like, it's enough. We don't need to waste our time there because we've already accomplished what we need to accomplish. I don't know.
Yeah. And they already have so many mother groups, and everyone that's on a school board in Utah is already basically gunning for the same things they are. So, it's just not necessary. Not Utah. Vermont also does not have a chapter. But I can't find, maybe more places have gotten chapters, because from every other state that I'm scrolling over, they at least have some. Iowa has five.
No doubt about it. And they've been running for school board elections slowly. So yes, that's.
Yeah. Although I will say, we can talk about like where they're at currently. They have been noted to be losing steam, thank goodness, in a lot of places. But apparently they supported 13 people for school board elections in Iowa last fall, and only one of their people won, which is great. Fabulous. Yes. Thank goodness. Yeah. But yeah, they do. They have a whole list of the candidates they support and who they're
behind. Did they intend to have a national presence right away? What was their like original launch about? Even it was about COVID and mask mandates.
It was about COVID, and then like their mission, they say their mission is that Moms for Liberty is dedicated to fighting for the survival of America by unifying, educating, and empowering parents to defend their parental rights at all levels of government.
But a giant asterisk there, like unless your kid is trans.
Exactly. And because then they need to protect your kid, but you have no right to say that maybe you need to do something on behalf of their children. And their vision is an America empowered and thriving in a culture of liberty. Their values are, as joyful warriors, we stand for truth, we build relationships, and we empower others. I mean, this whole idea of standing for truth is just so fraught with all sorts of problems. Like, whose truth? What truth? Mm-hmm. Like, where's that coming from? How is that constructed? It's just,
Well, and that also makes me think of the Lululemon girl boss language too. Like, we're going to empower fellow ladies, you know, that talk about like harnessing this untapped power of women who want to influence things. I don't know. Did you hear echoes of that when you were looking at their marketing materials?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they have all sorts of like resources for parents that you can go and like look at all of the topics that they're currently getting into. They have a podcast, but it is kind of like the things they have moved on to since COVID. Some of them are like obvious, what we know, the book banning stuff, the stuff that's anti LGBTQ. They're against CRT, whatever they think mm-hmm. that means. And then not surprisingly, when I was looking at it, like they're for quote unquote school mm-hmm. choice, because Bridget Ziegler, who's still on the school board where she lives in Florida, has four children that all go yeah. to private school.
Yeah.
Which to me is like, how the fuck do you run for school board for public schools when you don't even send your kids mm-hmm. there? How is that mm-hmm. a thing? Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you're for school choice and introducing things like vouchers, because then they benefit you.
Right.
And the choices that you've made for your kids, they're not benefiting anybody in the public school system. Right. They're only taking away from it. But you put yourself in a position where you can try to influence those sorts of legislations right. from happening. But one of their things that they are like staunchly against that I did not really know about, and that I was like, what the hell? And I had to dive into further, because to me, I think it's great, and my kids' school does it, and I love it, is SEL.
Yes. Oh my God. I knew you were going to say this. Yes. Okay. Social emotional learning. At first, I thought
I was going to ask you,
girls wearing pants, but then I was like, maybe not. Maybe they are against that. It's just hasn't picked up steam yet. No, this is like the new thing. And again, I was talking to another friend this week who's in education and a district leader. And he was saying that he has been admonished for even talking about social emotional learning because it's going to trigger people and cause them to come out against whatever program they're rolling out. If they call it social emotional learning, it's going to anger the same mm-hmm. people who don't like the word equity, who don't like the word justice, who don't like the word race, critical race theory, all of that. They've now lumped social emotional learning into it. And to be honest, there are programs that aren't great. Like one of the critiques of a lot of social emotional curriculum is that it itself is very white. There's a lot of whiteness mm-hmm. perpetuated, like European American cultural norms about how to even manage emotions or what indicates an emotion. Like there, all of that is any way we identify, express, share emotions, all of that is so cultural that unless we're being really thoughtful, mm-hmm. it can mm-hmm. be, it's a way to reproduce whiteness in I think like SEL programs that aren't great. But even that SEL, these people ironically are against because they are convinced.
I was going to say, I would think they would be on board yes. with that.
Right.
Yes, like, let's reproduce.
I want to tell
whiteness.
Them, like, P.S., yeah. this is actually like reproducing your cultural norms in many ways. There are some great SEL programs that do not do that. But because those exist, this entire label has now become akin to CRT, that it's a Trojan horse to sneak in critical race theory. It's a Trojan horse to sneak in equity, because there are SEL programs that are like, hey, we should care about each other and care about if people are systemically, you know, disadvantaged in some way. Like it talks about systems and structures and racism, because that's what is causing trauma and emotions. And so the really good SEL is attentive to those things. Yeah. And that has now triggered this ban on SEL from groups like this, who are convinced it's like a way to indoctrinate their kids into like wokeism.
Yeah. Into literally what they say is Marxism.
Yeah.
So it's right. the whole like communist Red Scare thing again that they're bringing out. And their way that they get to that is just mind-boggling when I'm reading through their like talk points about it. I'm like, how in the hell do you make that jump? So I know that you know this, but do you remember enough to say like what the framework of SEL? There's five competencies.
Oh God, you're putting me on blast.
Social emotional learning. I know. I know you've been through all of these. I know that you
not my, like, usually the people who in the world of education are focused on SEL tend to be like counsel, like school counselors, that it tends to be their job. Sometimes it's the part of the training for teachers. It tends to be elementary for sure. And I worked in an elementary education program for many years, and SEL ends up, you know, like getting woven throughout the school day. Just the ways it shows up is like, oh, we're going to have morning meeting where we talk about our, you know, like how everybody's doing, or if there's, you know, a concern, or we're going to have like, gosh, mindfulness is something that's come into schools to just like feel your body, take some deep breaths, like how to sort of address big feelings, big emotions, like what is bullying? Like these are all kind of real basic nuts and bolts of how it shows up. So something it is, especially as public school budgets get gutted and they don't even have school counselors, you know, like there's, or the school counselor's job is 18 gazillion things. Sometimes it is the classroom teacher, but you are showing my ignorance about the frameworks. That there's like a CASEL is the organization, and I can't think of what it stands for, but they've rolled out like new standards that do link these things to like equity, diversity kinds of like concepts and understandings. So that my guess is that's probably why they're pissed. But I don't, off the top of my head, cannot tell you the five. So please.
So CASEL does stand for Collaborative for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning. I wish that I would have thought to try to find my kids' elementary school SEL like curriculum, because they sent it out to everybody, like very detailed, and it's got different approaches and different talking points, whether you're teaching it to kindergartners or fourth graders or whatever. But it basically like teaches kids how to manage their emotions in a positive way. I mean, that's the overarching thing, but their five competencies are self-awareness, self-management, responsible decision-making, relationship skills, and social awareness. Horrible. How dare.
Like, how very dare they.
Anyone want to teach these things to children? But they say in their little talking points bulletin about this, these seemingly innocuous skills are very deceptive to most people. The problem, I'm like, yes, they are. Like, what? I can't imagine what you think is so horrible for them. But they say the problem with these skills is that they're delivered to students through a quote unquote equity lens, aka the viewpoint of someone who believes America is systemically racist and oppressive.
Yeah, I don't believe I know it.
I just know it.
Fact. Like, that is actually not something I believe in. It's not the tooth fairy, and you either believe in it or you don't. Like, it is fact.
I know, but this is the problem with all of these curriculum things we know they're trying to push, is like this viewpoint of America that they present as fact, that none of this stuff ever happened, or there's not the bias that we know that there is. But they say the ultimate goal of SEL is to shift the values, beliefs, attitudes, and worldviews of students. Okay.
Well, I would actually argue, like...
Like, say, okay.
If your worldview and values are bigotry, prejudice, ignorance, correct, then yes, I am trying to shift your worldview towards one of, like, compassion, empathy, understanding. But even those words have, like, empathy. One of the clients I work with, that has become a buzzword that some parents have been really upset by, that they very clearly have said, we don't like this curriculum because it teaches our kids to have empathy for this other group of people that we don't like. It really is.
Like, what do you
bananas.
What do you want your kids to have? You don't. Like, I don't understand that. I mean, even people that I don't agree with, I can certainly see the benefits of having empathy.
Like, I know I just pictured them as cackling witches in a basement with, you know, secret rings and potions, but these are human
people.
That's
what we are, the cackling witches.
As I cackle. I mean, everybody has a story. Everybody, like, it is... The best iteration of education that's rooted in equity and justice is like deeply love-based. It's humanizing. It's community building. It's trust building. That's what it is. And so the, and like I said before, the SEL, a lot of it can be, Dena Simmons is a great, educator, scholar to read her work. She writes about SEL, how often SEL gets whitewashed and is a way for white women who are the majority of elementary school teachers to, really impose cultural biases on how kids interact or like identify behavior as naughty or, unhealthy or whatever, when really it's just like a different cultural practice. And so there's a lot of ways that SEL can not, can actually reinforce disparities and inequities. And so Castle was applauded for these new standards because it was like recognizing the ways that it does need to be cognizant of diversity. But I think that's the point that links that bill I talked about at the top of the episode with the, these efforts is it's a rejection that any other way of doing things could be considered valid. And it, it's like such a narrow view that this is what it needs to be. And these are the people who need to control it. And so I don't like, I don't know. I'm curious if they have an alternate.
We just don't talk about these things. We just don't talk about them. There's no need to. There's no need to. They said that, that the goal is to psychologically manipulate students to accept the progressive ideology that supports gender fluidity, sexual preference exploration, and systemic oppression.
Well, you do know if we talk about queerness, it won't happen.
Yeah.
That is the logic. Right. And if we just don't talk about racism, then it will end.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if you knew, but apparently they say the people who control Castle ultimately control the entire education system.
Yeah, it's a, it's these, an Illuminati. It's a real Illuminati situation. And
Yeah. And they said that this, so this is probably the update that you were talking about. It said in 2020, they announced that there was a required update to the definition, and that new definition made the agenda of SEL clear. Their collectivist Marxist society that they seek began to reveal itself by describing the updated version as a school family community partnership addressing various forms of inequity and contributing to just societies.
Oh my God. I'm so disgusted.
Isn't it amazing? I'm like, I can't imagine how they would spin this. And then I read it and I'm like, oh my gosh, you people are off of your rockers. And I mean, honestly, like my kids, I know how this works in my kids' schools. They do, they have, it's on like Wednesday afternoons or something that they all have this time for it. And it is just like a weekly program where they talk about their emotions.
Like how to be in a, like what makes a good community and how we can be a good community member. That literally, like that's labeled Marxist.
Marxist.
I don't have a problem with that label, but it is why is that such a scary thing? I think what's always the irony of it that always strikes me so hard is like the history of Christianity is one of a collective, like
community building support.
And when, even when like the little that I know about the LDS churches through having grown up as your childhood buddy. Like you, that's how I knew.
But like incredible community.
That's not what I'm telling you. It's like it seems like of the branches of Christianity, one of the most collectivist, like very explicitly, like we're going to pool our resources. We're going to pool our wives. We're going to build these, like pool our husbands, I guess, and more than the women. You know, like, but it seems like one, and even just growing up with you too, when you were still practicing and, thinking about like the role of tithing and the role of your time and how you are supposed to give to the collective, like so much. And so it just strikes me like, is there issue with the concept of collectivity or is there issue with the concept of collectivity with people that they don't get to decide who they're
collective with? I mean, that's exactly the thing. Like it's collectivity if you are agreeable to the conformity of the group. But if you're not going to agree to those standards of conformity, then you're not in that collective. So
said Jesus. Like, because Jesus was really known for like having a checklist of reasons he would or would not hang out with you. God, it's so weird. I mean, it's got to make sense to people in their brains, even though if it's not like from the outside looking in, it just looks like absolute trash. But it's the idea that there is like this group get to have like rights and care and concern for each other, but anybody else does not deserve that. I don't know. I think a lot of the educators I'm working with are just so frustrated. Like the critiques of the Moms for Liberty of schools. Imagine schools as a place where it's like nonstop equity and justice work every second of the day. I wish.
I was going to say, wow, that sounds like utopia.
So far from that. And like the little tiny gains that have been made to get people to even put things on their radar, let alone shift any practice, like that's what they're freaking out about, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's annoying on two fronts. Like one, I can't believe you are against like loving people. And two, mm-hmm. I can't believe you think this is like what happens everywhere. It absolutely is not. You know,
no, but somehow that idea that like love and inclusion equals communism, which I'm like, okay, again, as you said, I don't actually have a problem with that characterization.
Or that like, maybe it is just this like assumption that community does equal conformity. And so if you are saying these are things, then I have, like, if that's the community, then I have to agree. When I think what I want to do is just like shake them and say, you get to be you. I get to be me. That person gets to be them. Like, you don't need to think like me. You just need to not advocate for the criminalization of these other people in our community. Like, maybe that's where the breakdown is the idea that like, that for them, community and conformity are the same thing. And so there is this fear that like, I'm going to have to become transgender myself if I let somebody else be that. It's like, no, you get to be you. Like,
yeah.
I am a cis hetero person. I so appreciate people who are queer and living their fullest, queerest lives because it's like setting the model for everyone to be who they are, everyone to get to be fully themselves and be loved for that. And it doesn't matter your body size, shape, color, et cetera. Like it's who you are in the space, the histories you bring with you. All of that are beautiful and matter. And so it doesn't mean I have to be that. It means that I get to be me. Like, that's so exciting. So that's the vision of the world that I'm operating in with education. And I don't know.
Except for it seems like who they are people who judge and suppress like the identities of other people.
Yeah.
That seems to be like their identity. So if they're not allowed to do that anymore, then they can't be who they are because that's all they seem to want to do. Oh. I was looking even at the and I think we call it X now. I don't know. I was never, we've talked about this. We were never on Twitter, that we were never good at it. We tried. But I was looking at, of course, like the founders of Moms for Liberty are on there. And I was looking at Tiffany Justice, her Twitter X feed, and she like somewhere upstream in it talks about how they've been called anti-LGBTQ. And that's just crazy because they have so many members who are gay.
I'm sorry. What? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
There are what?
Yeah, they're one of their, not their, like, there's the two of them that founded it, and then they have a third, like, executive member. Then they have, like, this board underneath them.
Okay.
Let me get to this page. And one of their, like, board, okay, I want to find what her, like, actual title is, but, okay, so director. So the director of national engagement, Tia Bess, is an African-American woman who is in a gay partnership.
What? I have a million questions for that person. Here's the thing. Like, some of their rhetoric, I would actually believe. Okay, you know how the ACLU will sometimes, like, they are just committed to free speech. So even when that means protecting free speech, you might find personally objectionable, right? Like, I believe the ACLU's mission because I have seen them defending all kinds of free speech. The mission of Moms for Liberty, I actually could imagine like saying parental choice, but then it should extend to all these other things. I have a million questions for Tia.
Yeah. I mean, even just the little paragraph that they put on the bottom is, I mean, it should say more questions. But so they say Tia, well, and they don't even come out and say in here that she is gay, but that's what seems to come out in the other materials. So she is a mom of three with a blended family, is what they call it. Bess resides with her partner on a farm in Clay County, Florida. Of course, they're still in Florida. Mm-hmm. She's been a member of Moms for Liberty since March 2021 when the pandemic led her to voice concerns regarding her children's school in her district. Like, listen, all of us were concerned about schools during the pandemic. I'm sure like you said, there are legitimate reasons that people were concerned and may have gotten involved at that point. She was born in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, but left for Norfolk, Virginia at the age of 7 due to gang violence in the area. Mm-hmm. Of course, let's just point that out about Philadelphia, the gang violence. Shortly after the move to Virginia, her family moved to Jacksonville, Florida, where she learned that her zip code didn't define her, a message she hopes to spread to America. Like, just the divisiveness in those few words. Like, but so here's the thing about that originally that I was going to say in her Twitter. So she says that they have people in their organization and one of their executive members who belongs to that community. But then if you scroll down just a little bit, she posts a video. I'm getting there. And she says, queer theory is rooted in pedophilia. And then posts this video that is supposed to support that. So how do you say, like, we have members that belong to this community, one of our executive team belongs to this community, and then you post a video that supports the idea of connecting pedophilia to all of that?
I guess that's what I'm saying. Like, I can absolutely imagine people being libertarian with a whole range of identities, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
This is maybe that plus a whole bunch of other stuff that is really enforcing the stigmatizing of queerness and upholding very whitewashed understandings of our nation. So it's that kind of layer. I don't think there's anything in libertarianism that says it has to be connected to that. So
yeah,
I don't get it.
Yeah, I know. So the rest of her page is just full of like horrible anti-trans things.
You had to go through that page. Thanks for taking one for the team. I totally do not want this on my algorithm for my computer.
Oh, I know. I was like, I hate if they see like in any way, because I actually looked up their LinkedIn bios too. And I was like, sometimes people can look and see who looked at them on LinkedIn. And I don't want to be part of that list, but
no,
I am. Anyway, it was all in the name of being a petty detective. So I hope they find that out someday. But that their justification for how they view this fight against trans rights in the lens of parental freedom is, she says just straight out in the tweet that she put out, parents have the fundamental right to direct the upbringing of their children. Parents don't have the right to abuse their children.
Yeah,
basically, that goes on to say that transitioning is child abuse. So therefore, they then have a right to take over the parenting of your children because they can call it child abuse, which I'm like, I would like a lot of your views I consider child abuse. Mm-hmm. So,
mm-hmm. So it's, I mean, I feel like if I just can't even go there. Kids' lives are at stake with this. Like, it's so disturbing to know that people are so dismissive of this reality, and it's going to result in the harm and death of kids is just awful. So, okay, well,
And I think we're all like more aware probably of the efforts of this group now in school boards to ban books. And just one of the things that has come up that's like interesting about their book banning, although Tiffany Justice was on an MSNBC show like in January at some point where she was saying that like they're not banning books. She's saying that people can write books, they can print books, they can publish them. It can be sold or in the public library, but they're talking about school libraries and they're talking about having curated books for public school libraries. And that's not the same as banning books.
Well, that's a mincing of words.
Yeah, there's a lot of semantics.
I mean, yeah, thank you, Tiffany. People can still access this information. Yes, I get that. Yes, the idea that isn't right. I understand that. I am mad that you think you get to curate something and that you are curating a list based on absolute prejudice against queer and BIPOC authors. Like I'm not mad because I think you are burning publishing printing presses to the ground. I know you are not. What I'm mad about is that the message we are conveying to kids and families in public schools is that we've said, oh, stories about your lives are so taboo, they don't get to be here.
Yeah.
That's what I'm pissed about.
Well, and it is just this idea that this small group of people, and really, it is, even if you take their number of what, 115,000 members, like of all the moms in the all of the school districts, that's tiny. They are now trying to control everything that's going on in schools. And there have been several studies that have gone back and looked at who is filing the complaints.
It's like six people or something, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's different in every school district, but there's a couple that I found. Like one, there was one in West Valley, Utah, where of the 205 complaints that were filed about books in that school district, 199 of those complaints were filed by one couple.
God. Guys, keep them busy. This is what I'm saying. We have to give these people something else to do. It's so infuriating. And the oversight, at least in Iowa, again, that the way the process is it just takes one person.
Yeah.
The complaint that pulls it out of everywhere and for the review process. So that it is so disproportionate. Like the power distribution is so disproportionate. Like that should not be that one person can gum up the works for everyone else that hard, that fast. That seems wild to me.
Yeah. Yeah, it is wild. But that's exactly what is happening. Mm. And some of the people who have called for certain books to be banned admit that they haven't even read them.
I'm sorry, there's curated, Mandy. Can we use the correct term?
Curating. Mm-hmm. They're curating these books that they have not even read. There's just one of the links on the Moms for Liberty site is parent resources. And I think 90% of those parent resource links are links to websites that will tell you what books you should request be curated out of your child's library.
Right.
Then just without it gives any bullet points. So you actually have no context. You have no idea what the entire book is about, but they're banning them. And they're banning books, like not just books. I've heard some of the excerpts read at school boards that have sexually explicit scenes in them. But they're also banning books like on the Civil War, because there was one, a fictional account of an American Civil War with fifth grader was deemed unsuitable because of its depictions of out-of-marriage families between white men and black women. Otherwise known as rape.
Call that. Oh my god! I'm good. You just made my brain bleed. I think I'm hemorrhaging.
Out of marriage families.
Oh my god!
In the Civil War between white men and black women. What kind of mental gymnastics?
Yeah, right.
And then another book. Another book that was about Galileo, who was persecuted by the Catholic Church for theorizing the Earth revolved around the sun. It says in one of these spreadsheets in their references that it should not be read without some counterbalancing praise of the church. They want both good and bad
represented. Oh my, you are just like itching all of my sweet spots for what I do for a living. This piece of it is so frustrating. The idea of balance as somehow like neutral and objective. And it is coming up in really, really, really disturbing ways. Like in Texas, there's an example where this administrator was explaining how to implement a new law and saying, well, you know, if you have a book about the Holocaust, we need to balance that. And it's like, what is the balance? Like Mein Kampf? And it's like, who knows what's right? Like this idea of
balance, who knows? I think didn't we decide we knew?
I thought we did.
When did we decide we didn't know that the Holocaust was bad?
And it's this, it's this like desire that if you say anything bad, you have to pair it with a compliment or else you are being biased. It's so, it is dangerous. It is stupid. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what, like, I have way more professional ways to talk about this, but it is so, so, so frustrating that is how, quote, objectivity is framed. Is like, if you say this, you have to say that. It's like, well, not all things live on the same level. And I think we can say genocide is bad. I think we can say that.
And I don't know. I don't think that we're there. Honestly, the country right now, we're clearly
not as a country there. But I, like, personally, I will say it. And I think that's what it's to try to, you know, support educators. Another example, this actually was one of my former students, and it was a video that went viral. He was on a Zoom call with an administrator, and he said, you know, I want to be able to teach that slavery was wrong, that that's the stance. And this law says, like, I just want to clarify with you that I can teach that slavery was wrong. And she's like, well, I'm going to have to look into that. Like, that's the response. Yes. Like, we can't teach kids that they need to feel bad about that. So I really need to look into that. That's where we're at. That it's like the people asking for that. The insecurity at the heart of this is so, so, so deep. Like, so much of this maps on interpersonal bullshit too. Like the idea that like you can't get any sort of criticism unless it's couched in 9 compliments is like passive aggressive thing. Like, no, just tell me. And then I'll think like, I love myself enough to handle that. You know, that's fine. Mm-hmm. There's something I need to work on. Great. Doesn't mean I'm a terrible person. It's the same thing as this. Like, yeah, we can talk about really awful things and be honest about them. And that's okay. That doesn't mean you have to hate yourself, you know? I don't know. It's just, that is a lot. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's all sorts of other books that they've banned as well. Like they banned Amanda Gorman in Miami-Dade. One of the chapters at Moms for Liberty got The Hill We Climb. The
poem from the inauguration? Adaptation
from the inauguration by Amanda Gorman banned. Because it's critical of American history. And the activist whose complaint got that book removed has links to none other than our favorite Proud Boys, who Moms for Liberty has done all sorts of, there's all sorts of like intermingling with the Proud Boys group and their activities and Moms for Liberty activities. Surprise, surprise. And then the other side note, like at the end of this article about their book banning efforts, that I was just like, of course. And this I know we're going to get more into in this entire season that we're doing. But they said that while engaged in censorship efforts, Moms for Liberty has partnered with several conservative organizations to introduce conservative books into public school libraries. Mm-hmm, 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 mm-hmm. So as always, it's not just about like removing the things they don't agree with. It's replacing them with their quote unquote truth / agenda, worldview, whatever that's in there. And that has been going on since, as we've talked about before, Civil War times and before.
Which we'll get into.
So much to that. Yeah. So much to that we'll discuss.
again, I'm like fascinated by this person who sits on their board, because another one of the books, like there's just a huge, huge list, but one that people might be familiar with is a children's book, Hair Love. And I can't think of the right that we used to look it up, but it's this really sweet picture book. And I was talking to my daughter about these book bans. She's in first grade and was trying to explain to her, you know, what's why mommy is mad. Like the other day I picked her up because all this stuff was happening. And she's like, Mom, how was your day? What was the best part of your day? And I'm like, I'm enraged today. Like I'm not doing well today. And I just tried to explain in a really basic way. And she's like, why are they so upset? I'm like, well, because I don't want to teach her like we're the good guys, they're the bad guys. Like that's not the point. You know, I said, I think people are really scared. And I think they are scared of people who are different than them. And they are scared of something that they don't know or don't understand. And our family tries to be curious, you know, tries to understand how things came to be, why things are the way they are, how people are different than us. Like that's what we try to do. By the way, there is a great book I want to shout out. If anyone has little kids, it's called The Great Banned Books Bake Sale by Aya Khalil. It just came out and it's so great. And it's this little class of kids led by this girl, and she organizes, and they basically like push back on book bans in their elementary school. And it's just such a great book for kids about this exact issue, if people are into that. Anyway, to go back to Hair Love, it's this really sweet story about a little girl and her dad, and the mom is coming home. It was an Oscar-winning short film, even. They made it into like a cartoon film, but it's like, am I going to have puff buns? Am I going to have braids? Like, it's just the dad and her trying out different hairstyles, and their mom comes, that's it. But it's a little black girl. And there's no reason you would ban it. It's all about self-love, of like loving all these different hairstyles and like feeling beautiful. That's it. Like, I don't, what the, like, what?
I mean, so, you could go to their website and download their resources. I'm sure they'd tell you exactly what's wrong.
Exactly right.
But for like the life of me, like my brain just doesn't function that way. I can't even come up with what they would have a problem with.
To that point, I've been imagining a group called Moms for Schmiberty that shows up at school board meetings and asks for like increasingly insane things and using their logic, but they're just taking it like 97,000 miles down the road of what, like why, to go back to sad beige moms, like we shouldn't have any colors at all in school because that might give kids the wrong idea. So we're going to, everything needs to be painted beige, you know, that like, and then I thought, don't do that because you'll just give these people ideas and there might be, you know, people that actually agree, because things that are so ludicrous keep popping up on these agendas. But I still would love there to be like a group that trolls these people at every single school board meeting in some comedic way.
I mean, thankfully there have been several groups that have popped up, like counter groups of moms who are like, no, that's not what we're for. And we are going to have a presence against these groups. And, you know, I mean, we should all try to find those chapters and get engaged and start our own. I mean, and I think that goes to the whole point that like so many of us never get engaged in school board meetings. I mean, I listened to several during the pandemic as they were making decisions about things. It was the only time in my life I've listened to a school board meeting, except for like the excerpts now that come up on, you know, my Instagram feed of all of this ridiculousness that happens. But truthfully, I mean, more of us really need to get involved in that. I mean, my cousin sent me a link that the school board position in our area is open for, and they're looking for people to run this year. And she's like, you should do this. And my husband said, are you trying to get a divorce?
I mean, I think that's part of the, what works out is you may, like all of this activism coming from Moms for Liberty-esque, you know, whatever, makes these positions less and less desirable for people to hold if they have any sort of like reasonable desire for sanity.
Well, and so you because this group, I mean, one of their hallmarks and one of the things that is like, if you look in the Wikipedia article about them, and they have an entire section about how this part of their organization is to harass and threaten school board members and teachers and superintendents, and how they've gotten like specific people to basically leave their positions by harassing them out of it mm-hmm. and like personally attacking and threatening them mm-hmm. and going after their own lives. So it's like, yeah, why? Who wants to engage with people mm-hmm. on that sort of level? On the other hand, then we're just like leaving everything right. out for right. them to go. And because it's too hard to deal with them.
And also, I can't, like, as a counter tactic, that I'm hoping that doesn't feel good to people, like, well, then we'll just harass them back. Like, no, I have a problem with that tactic mm-hmm. too. Mm-hmm. It's just, again, so much harder to build things and to be inclusive and thoughtful about all of this. If you're not, you have a way easier time like getting what you want.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Honestly, I think about this all the time. I'm having a 3-year-old who has a lot of big emotions. We could probably use some SEL in our house. But I'm like, anyone who wants to be a terrorist should just spend time with the 3-year-old because their tactics are so effective. Like, they and mm-hmm. it does seem like the same thing. Like, all these stalling tactics are, you know, like screaming, hitting, whatever. It's like, well, yeah, I don't want to use those tactics. Seem as an adult human, not great, you know. And I think about the social movements that have worked for equity and justice, and all the like super creative, like dangerous ways that they've had to engage. When there are way easier tactics, but they're just not ethical, you know. Like I get it. Anyway, or at least like,
well, this makes me think too, like, I mean, we talked about in the beginning, the scandal with the third no longer mentioned founder of the group, Bridget Ziegler, and getting into that whole thing of her and her husband and the threesomes and the whatever their like marriage included in it.
Yeah.
And there was a clip that was going around on social media of a younger person confronting her at the school board meeting where people were asking for her to resign. And I thought like his response to her was so great. Like he got up and he said, like, I am not here to like harass or shame you about whatever activities you and your husband are involved in.
Totally.
That's what we've been trying to teach you.
Right.
Is that
that's right.
No one has a right to be in that part of your lives or to tell you how to live or what to do or what consenting adults can be involved in. He's like, I don't want you to step down because you had a threesome with your husband.
Right.
So I want you to step down from your job because you're bad at your job.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
And I was like, yes, obviously. I mean, for me, I think a little bit is justified.
But the hypocrisy of it.
Hypocrisy.
And not even harassing, but just noting the hypocrisy. Like, how dare you police and shame other people when you yourself are involved in these things? Like, that does feel like especially annoying, but it's absolutely true. Like, sure, you do you and get your free gun with whoever you want to. Like, that is the point, you know, who's consenting, of course.
Ugh. Yeah. So anyway, that whole thing with her and her husband is still, I guess, ongoing, even though I don't think it's had a full resolution. It doesn't sound like there's going to be any charges against him at this point, whether there should be or not. Mm-hmm. But apparently he had, like, this was not just an isolated thing, because when whoever law enforcement went through his phone and found these videos of this happening, he also had a note on his phone called The List that was a list of women's names and like some of the women that they were known to have interacted and were on that. So they just assume like the other women were also more women.
The specific allegations are that he, outside of the threesome, like sexually assaulted this woman. Is that the story?
Yeah. Okay. That's the story is that it was supposed to be a meetup with her, with the husband and Bridget and this third person. Mm-hmm. And then Bridget backed out for whatever reason and wasn't going to come.
Probably had some books to ban because that it's really time consuming.
Yeah. She had a school board meeting to where she could harass people about their sexual proclivities.
Right.
And so, but the husband was like, well, I'm still going. Like, I'm not going to let this stop me. And then apparently the other woman was not interested in
right.
just an encounter with him right. and claim that he still forced himself on her. But he's not getting charged with anything, so I'm not sure where that comes from or if it just turned into a terrible thing to try to convict him on it or, you know, go after him. She decided not to.
So tell me,
maybe someone paid her off. I have no idea.
What's next for Monster Liberty? What's on their agenda?
Well, so, I mean, we hope downfall is next for Moms for Liberty. And there have been, like, some indications that things are not going so well for them. So when I first just, like, Googled Moms for Liberty to start getting into things, the, like, headline of top stories in the news for Moms for Liberty has multiple articles about how there's a struggle that's happening. Like, there's one from just a day ago right now that says Moms for Liberty completely collapses in former strongholds. Another one that says Moms for Liberty chapter implodes after humiliating school board election defeat. There's an article in the Daily Beast that's titled Even Moms for Liberty Are Tired of Moms for Liberty. And then another one says this Moms for Liberty chapter membership went from 200 to 3. So there's a lot. I mean, I looked up the chapter that's supposedly here in Las Vegas of Moms for Liberty, and there's like two listed members, and under the link to, you know, get information about that chapter, there's nothing there. Mm-hmm. It's just listed like who these two members are. And then, of course, I looked them up. And terrible.
Of course you did. I mean, here's what I will say too. I think some of the criticism is like, moms are dumb, ha ha, silly women. Like, there is some misogyny in the criticism of like some of their actions that I don't care for. But it's similar to the young person who was saying, I don't want you to step down because you had a threesome. I want you to step down because you're bad at your job. It's similar. Like, I don't want to critique you because, like, how dare women think they should have a say in policy? It's like, I hate your policies. I don't like that, you know? That's good to know. But I also, because we know that this is...
They're not going away.
Right.
Yeah, it's not going away. I mean, there's... We'll get into this in like other episodes that we'll have upcoming, but like there have been many like deep dives into Moms for Liberty that then go and say like, this is not something that just started right now. There is a deep history to the kinds of activities that they are getting involved in. And everyone thinks of like feminism as the main political movement that women are associated with. But this counter movement of conservative women has been around for longer than feminism. It is very, very deeply rooted in our country, in colonialism in general, which is something that we plan to get into all of. So yeah, it's not going away, whether or not this particular iteration or name for it will be the same. This is not going to be something that is gone. So
I think that's two reasons why the news that they're like imploding does not make me feel relief. One is they're not going away. And two, I know it doesn't, to your point about the 199 book bans being for one person, it does not need huge numbers to be powerful or effective. So I don't know what exactly we do with that information other than say, so that means that people who are wanting justice and equity and anti-racism and, you know, all of those things, we have to be constantly engaged, organized, et cetera, we can't rest, you know?
And even if they were to go away, like what you were saying earlier about how easy it is to dismantle things and then how long it takes to fix that.
Right.
And to get back to, so, you know, even if no one else tried to curate any more public school libraries, getting all these books back into them, this just takes so much longer. So there's still so much to do, which I would say, get involved in your school board, listen to meetings. If there are openings and you have more than 5 seconds in your day to do something, get involved. I mean, but this is also why moms, and conservative moms in general, maybe even like fundamentalist Christian moms in general, are so effective. Because they do have the time. I don't know how else to say it mm-hmm. and not sound like not. I know very well that moms that stay at home have a ton of work.
Oh, my God.
But
yes,
moms that work are doing that work as well as working as well as I mean, there's not a good comparison, but I'm just saying they have a lot of time to do this.
And I think they like a culture, like you say, especially in those communities with that particular combination of identities that really incentivizes and supports that being how women spend their time, you know, that it is like the domain, you know, so it, mm-hmm. it's like a celebrated, I don't know, you know, like a approved sort of way to get involved. I mean, I think about our very first episodes years ago now when we talked about the anti-suffragists and like that being an approved way for women to be in the public and speaking about why women shouldn't be in the public and speaking.
Yeah.
So it is this like weird way to be empowered while also like arguing for your disempowerment, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's probably deeper psychology there that some psychiatrist somewhere is like, yes, here are the root reasons for that weird combination of things. But they're definitely, even if this group is not as powerful in I know that they've like been involved in political endorsements, like presidential election wise. I'm wondering like what their role will be in this election.
Yeah. I mean, their last conference, they had like everyone there giving speeches about things, everyone but Trump. But Trump has also mentioned them in rallies as a group that he lauds and thinks is fantastic. I mean, DeSantis made a quote at one point that like he had spent like years trying to get 20 to 30 year old females involved with the Republican Party, and he was never able to do it until Moms for Liberty came along. So they're hugely influential at this point. It was Bridget Ziegler was one of like the co-founders, writers, something along with DeSantis for the whole Don't Say Gay bill, whatever they called it, the parental rights bill in Florida. But like she was all up in that whole thing. So yeah, I mean they're absolutely involved very widely in the presidential campaign, the candidates, like they all want it to be endorsed by them. So
well, and again, this is maybe like the Ginny Thomas principle of activism is like you don't have to be everywhere all the time. You just have to be in the right room at the right time. And you have enormous influence that is really hard to undo. So if you're friends with the person, you know, you're in a place where there aren't any checks and balances or like any sort of counter political resistance, a place like Florida or a place like Iowa, then if you're buddies with the governor, you can get your education policy pass, like super quick. And then it's on the books and doing a ton of damage and hard to undo. You don't have to be necessarily dedicating, you know, your entire life to anything. You just have to be in the right place at the right time because of your networks, you know?
I mean, I think, I don't know exactly next what we're going into, but there's so many different branches of this that...
Well, I think maybe, yeah, I don't know either because it's hard. Like, do we keep just working backwards or do we try to go way back and then work our way forwards? I don't know because really this season, the big giant list, like we probably are going to talk about this for the next 2 to 3 years. We want to look at this idea of settler colonialism and its link to white supremacy and its link to motherhood, like where all of those things come together. And so part of me thinks like, oh, let's do go back to like the earliest days of settlement that white women were involved in and then work our way forwards. But there are ways to just take one step back a generation to look at mothers of massive resistance who shut down schools instead of desegregate them. And, you know, so I don't know. Do you have a preference before we go?
Yeah. I mean, I think we could go back just to more recent, but then I think we'll always be referring back to
deeper things,
the very beginning of things. And so maybe just starting back there and then seeing how it builds throughout time.
Start at the very beginning. A very good place to start. When we begin with white supremacy. I can make up entirely different
words. Yeah, let's write that.
So that's for us. Well, I think this is super important learning for us to do. And I think it's just a deeper excavation of how all of these forces mix together. But this, you know, the way in to this prism is white motherhood. And like you said, the weaponization of white motherhood is at the heart of a lot. So yeah, fellow white moms, buckle up. It's going to be a bumpy ride on this one, but it's super important.
Yep. All right. Yay. I'm glad we're back.
Yay, me too. It's so good to see you too. And I'm so glad people know that we aren't dead and that we are still friends.
That's right.
Nothing has happened except just the general stress of life. That's it. And I know everyone listening gets it. So thank you for your patience to our listeners. And yeah, just keep us posted if you all have questions or things you want us to dive into for this. But this is what we're doing this year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.